Hello, it's Wayne Perry, the TV carpenter here. Can I ask you a question? Are you a DIY doer? Meaning, do you like DIY? Do you like fixing things in your home? Or does it frighten you and you'd rather somebody else did it, like your other half, or you paid somebody to come and do it? The reason I'm asking the question is, it's either one or the other. People don't realise anyone can be a DIY doer. And for me, when I say that, I don't mean the big jobs. I don't mean putting up shelves. I don't mean laying laminate flooring. For me, DIY is about having a safe house for you and your family. So when I say safe, knowing how the smoke alarm works and why does it beep, or knowing how to turn your water off if your house is flooding, or if the fuse trips and your electrics go out, knowing what all the buttons on the fuse board do. So that's a safe home. I think everyone should have that. Everyone should have a practical home, meaning everything should work as it should. So if your curtain tracks falls out the wall, you know how to put it on. Or if your toilet seat breaks, you know how to change it. But also, I think everyone should have a beautiful home, knowing what paint types to use, knowing how to upcycle some furniture. If you would like a safe, practical and beautiful home, let me teach you the DIY around it. All you need to do is join the DIY Doers Facebook group. You can find it on Facebook, or you can go to my website, thetvcarpenter.com, and I'll link you straight through to there. Let me help you create a safe, beautiful, and practical home for you and your family. On today's show, I chat with Kate Watson-Smythe. She's an award-winning journalist, podcaster, and she's writer of the UK's number one interior design blog, Mad About the House.
You just show up every day at the same time every day, to the point that, you know, I would and still do get emails, you know, if a post is late or if I don't post, you know, I get emails from people because that's become part of their day. They know there will be a blog post at 7 o'clock every morning. And so 8 years on, I still post 4 times a week.
Hello and welcome to the TV Carpenter podcast with me, Wayne Perry. This week has been a busy week. I know it's hard to get busy in this lockdown, but me and my family decided to knock down the wall between our lounge and what was our old nursery slash office. It's just a stud wall, so we checked the house wasn't going to fall down. But we did it, and we actually got all involved. So if you check out the TV Carpenter and my Instagram, it's called Demolition, and I saved it there as a highlight. And you can watch the whole day. We did it all in a day. And what was really lovely, I decided, rather than my daughter doing her maths homework day at school, I put some goggles on her, some ear defenders, and gave her a hammer. And I also gave my wife a hammer as well. And they both just smashed this wall apart and got rid of so much anger. And my daughter was like screaming, going, "This is the best day ever," as she's hammering through a wall. So if you watch my stories, you can see that. But actually, what was really lovely is we've opened up now. So the whole one area of our house is all open plan. So we've got a huge lounge now and a kitchen. So it's just made such a difference. And my wife is beaming because now she's got this big open plan living room that she's kind of always wanted. But what comes with that is interior design. So I've been trying to choose colours. So we painted the old office, which we've knocked into, in this Farrow & Ball sulking room pink, which was beautiful. And it was suggested to us by my good friend Nikki Banford-Bowes of And When They Went Wild, who you might recognise from Interior Design Masters. She's a really good friend of mine. And it looked beautiful. But the lounge is like sticky blue, which is, it's been painted that for a few years. So we're trying to now decide which way to go. I think we're going to keep the pink, But it's interesting, these names and colours of, you know, we've been looking online and looking at different things. Look, my wife's looking at teals and all these different colours. And it's interesting how names of paints draw you in more to certain things. So if it's got a name, I seem to like it more rather than just a RAL colour. And it's just, I find naming of paints really interesting. And because of that, I wanted to share this little mini interview that I did with my sponsor, Thorndam. And I talked to Caroline about why and how they choose names for their paints. So have a little listen to this 1 minute interview with Caroline, and she explains how Thorndown come up with the names for their peelable glass paint and for their classic home range paint colour palette. Thorndown peelable glass paint has some really interesting names. I want to know, where did they come from?
So with the opaque solid coatings, with those colours, they come from the wood paint range. So with the wood paint range, I've named everything sort of after either sort of nature or places of around Somerset. So you have the Chantry Cream, which is after the Chantry Chapels in Wells Cathedral, and Dulcot Stone and Dalton Stone, their local quarries, and then... And so they've got taken into the peelable glass paint sort of opaque range. But then with the translucence, because it was going to be sort of such a fun, kind of quite a kiddie arts and crafts range, that I wanted them to have really sort of just playful names, hence Goblin Green and Ogre Orange, Dragon Red, White Witch, and Bat Black. And yes, it was just a bit of fun, really.
My daughter absolutely loved those. If those paint colours draw you in, what were they, Goblin Green or Chancery Cream, you can visit thorndown.co.uk, and if you type in the code TV Carpenter, you will get 15% discount on any of their online purchases. So explore their colour palettes and see if anything takes your fancy. What was really lovely before I knocked down this wall in my lounge kitchen area was I had the interview with my next guest, and it was with Kate Watson Smythe. And it came off the back of me reading her book. She has a new book out called 101 Interior Design Answers. And I thought I would know most of these. And to be fair, I knew a fair few because it's the industry that I'm in. But I read this book and I inhaled it in a day whilst in the garden with a gin and tonic. And it was really nice because there were some real gems in there. And one of the main things that she talks about in the book is six questions. And you need to ask yourself these six questions before you do any interior design, before you, you know, pick up a paint or decide what way your lightings are going to go. And it talks about, especially as we're knocking down this wall and, you know, the things where we go, why shouldn't we do it? Well, we're turning our flat from a 3-bedroom to a 2-bedroom. But to be fair, it was a really small room. It was big enough for a cot. And you kind of go, well, actually benefiting us now having a big hub of a lounge kitchen rather than having, you know, an okay lounge and kitchen, but then having this tiny room that was my office, which I never used, which just became a dumping ground. If we add that to our lounge, the difference that it makes to our life right now at this moment in time is amazing and far outweighs any, you know, any future worry. And she touches on that in this book. So it was very apt that I read this book just before knocking down this wall. And we discuss these questions that you need to ask. And also she explores and explains her career and how she came about creating the biggest interior design blog, Mad About the House. So I hope you enjoy the main event, my conversation with the very lovely Kate Watson Smythe. Kate Watson Smythe, thank you for coming on the TV Carpenter podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited about this one. I've known you for a few years and knowing your work. But the first thing I want to talk about really is, I know in any industry, in any business, like consistency is the key to success. And you've been an interior designer journalist, interior design journalist for 20 years, interior stylist for over 10. Firstly, what made you 20 years ago decide journalistically to have interior design as your topic? What made you decide that?
Well, I think it was probably one of those happy accidents. I mean, I trained as a news reporter many years ago. And so when I first worked on a local paper in Birmingham, I was reporting news. I was, you know, it was pre-internet. I'm that old. So I was ringing up the fire engine, the fire department and the police and the hospitals and sort of seeing what had happened and whether there was any news there. I was reporting court stories. So it was all quite sort of gritty stuff. And I never really loved it. I am not a natural news hound. And I've always really enjoyed the process of writing. And I really wanted to write features. And I then moved to London with my then boyfriend, now husband. And I was doing shifts on the national papers. And I ended up working on the Independent, again on the news desk. And I would keep sort of going over to the features desk and going, oh, let me write some features. And they'd be like, no, go away, grubby little news hack. We don't want the likes of you around here. And so, I mean, I had to get pregnant. So, no, what sort of happened was I got pregnant, and it's very difficult to be a news reporter when you have a baby, because you can't say, you know, would you mind awfully letting that bomb off at 4? Because I've got to get back for the nanny at 6. So what happens is, back then, as a female news reporter, it was quite difficult because you'd be kept in the office, or you'd have to keep yourself in the office rewriting the news wires rather than going out looking for stories because of childcare issues. So features at that time lent itself much better to women.
Yeah.
So I went freelance. And then, because I obviously knew lots of people at the Independent, I then got a call in that way you sometimes do, you know, it's not always what you know, it's who you know.
Absolutely.
From someone on the property desk. And she said, oh, you know, we really need something written in a hurry about the pick of the property market this week. Are you available? And I was like, well, maybe, could be, you know, it's a bit like now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Consults totally empty diary and goes, oh, maybe I'm free. So I sort of bit her hand off and started doing that. And that was back in the days when the property section of the Independent was a kind of 48 page weekly pullout. I mean, imagine.
Oh, wow.
So they had so many pages to fill. So I sort of slotted in there and started writing about the property market, you know, the nicest houses on the market that week. Then I kind of worked my way inside and got regular features, talking to experts on, you know, interior design. And I just loved it. I felt like I'd found my home. I never get bored of looking at other people's houses. And so I carried on doing that for ages. And then obviously, you know, newspapers started to decline. This was back in the early 2000s. My first son was born in 2001. So newspaper sales started declining. They didn't know how to deal with the internet, which was producing all this free content. And so my freelance career started going down and down and down. And, you know, that's when I set the blog up. But I mean, I've always been interested in, you know, I've always rearranged my bedroom, and, you know, I used to make shelves when I was about 6. I used to make bookshelves out of cardboard and sellotape, and I was really cross when they didn't work. So, and I did carpentry at school when I was in primary school. I've made a 3-legged milking stool, which is still in my house somewhere.
Well, dig it out. Just comment, you just reminded me, when I was a kid, I mean, my bedroom was in the loft, and my parents very rarely came up. It's one of those things, teenage boy, you just leave them up there.
Oh, you don't want to go near there.
No, I've got there to get the
towels.
I've
got two of them.
That's about it. And my mum coming in, and one day, like, going ballistic, because I'd literally taken the wardrobe apart and took the sides of the wardrobe off, created a desk and put a shelf up, and I'd cut up all the wood from the, like, flat pack furniture wardrobe. And she went ballistic. It just totally reminded me of that. You know, you just
that's amazing, though. That's so much more talented than my cardboard and sellotape bookshelves.
I might have been drilling above electric plug sockets, but that's another story. We'll learn about that afterwards. So you, so when did you like doing the blog then? At what point did, because your blog is huge, like when did you start doing the blog?
I launched that in 2012, and I launched it very much as an online CV. I thought it would get me more work. I had no notion that it could possibly be anything else. So I did quite a certain amount of research beforehand, as you can imagine, I'm a journalist, and discovered that a lot of blogs fail. I mean, back then, this was relatively early into blogging. There was a sort of wave of interior bloggers in 2009. You know, Will Taylor, Bright Bazaar, Kate Baxter, Fabric of My Life, Design Shepherd. And I came in on the second wave. And so we knew a little bit more about it. And there was a lot of sort of pieces had been written online and on blogs about how many, many blogs fail in the first 3 to 6 months, because for the first 3 months, you're uploading copy all the time. You're really excited. You know, you've got your little corner of the internet and you're really into it. And then between sort of 3 and 6 months, you realize that actually nobody apart from your mum and maybe the postman is reading it. And so you become disillusioned. And so suddenly, before you know where you are, a week has gone by and you haven't posted and nobody seemed to notice. So then it's 2 and then it's 3 and then gradually it dies a death. So I was very aware of that and was determined that that wouldn't happen to me. So I came up with an idea, which was 365 objects of design, not desire, but design. And I thought, if I count those out every day, I will have to post every single day because it's one a day for a year. So, and then I think things were different then. So it was a sort of little postcard of shopping, which feels a bit wrong to encourage people to shop all the time. But, you know, 8 years ago, it would be, you know, here's a really great chair, would look really good with this table. I've just discovered this new designer and this is their lamp, you know. So it was that sort of little object every day. And I did that for, I think, the first 3 years I posted every day. And then I started mixing up the objects of design with going back to the property market and writing about other things.
And it is that consistency, isn't it? Like we were saying, it's consistency.
You know, I basically filled the internet.
Yes.
You know, I've taken over the internet. Or if you go on, all you'll find is me and my posts. You know, I've filled it. But there was that sort of idea that, yes, it was consistency. You know, you just show up every day at the same time. Every day to the point that, you know, I would and still do get emails, you know, if a post is late or if I don't post, you know, I get emails from people because that's become part of their day. They know there will be a blog post at 7 o'clock every morning. And so 8 years on, I still post 4 times a week with a sponsored post if I have one on a Wednesday. And that way people know what they're getting, what time it's coming.
So how is it doing? You've set yourself a task of doing 4 posts a week. Does that become a bind or have you got used to that now?
I've got used to it and I do really like the routine. And I have to say, for the most part, I never have a problem with it. And I think that, you know, perhaps comes back to the journalism training. When I first went freelance and I was writing for The Independent quite a lot, and they used to have a Saturday feature called The 50 Best. And it was anything you like, from the 50 best artisanal sausages to the 50 best lampshades, the 50 best spring book releases, you know, it was anything and everything. And, you know, so not only would you have to find these 50 things, you would have to find something to say about each one of them. And they weren't all allowed to start with the word this, you know, this is a great book, this is a great rug. So you had to really think about it. And there would be between 75 and 100 words on each object that you'd found. So, you know, who knew at the time, that's turned out to be incredible training for writing a blog, because you give me any object, you give me any subject, I can probably give you 75 to 100 words within about 2 minutes. They might not be very good ones, but, you know, I know how to do that. And so I've found that I can come up with a subject and I might think I haven't got that much to say about it, but, you know, it will come out in the end. So I think that's down to being a journalist and a trained writer.
Okay. Now, we're currently in lockdown. How are you coping doing all of this work whilst having all the family still in the house?
Well, I'm lucky in that I've got now teenage boys. So they're 16 and 19. And so I don't really see them till lunchtime. and that's, you know, I don't have to homeschool, thank God, because that was not my forte, you know, baking with kids, all that kind of stuff. I'm not good at it. So I'm trying to work in the morning. And then in the afternoon, well, I probably still don't see them. Let's be honest. They're teenage boys.
Yeah.
But there's more kind of cooking and cleaning and sort of house stuff going on. I have to say my productivity levels have slowed. I mean, I look back on it and I think, you know what, 6 weeks ago I was, you know, writing a book, I was going to meetings, I was writing the blog all the time, I was doing collaborations with brands, you know, and I think, God, how did I do all that? Because now, you know, I get up and I sort of stagger through a blog post and then I need a little lie down.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. It's like that saying, isn't it? You know, if you want something done, ask a busy person.
Yeah, totally.
And I was the same. You know, I would work a whole day building carpentry. Then I would do my podcast or whatever. And I'm thankful that I started the daily DIY, which, like yourself, I set myself a task of releasing a video every day, Monday to Friday. And it's the thing that gets me out of bed. It's the reason I get up to do something. So it is crazy. I don't know how we're all going to go back to work, if there is ever any work when we all start again.
Don't go there.
I'm not. I'm positive. I'm very positive. But interestingly, you know, you've written some amazing books, and I wanted to get you on today to talk about your new book, like Mad About the House, 101 Interior Design Answers. So I've read quite a few of late interior design books, and there's lots of different angles that interior designers and people who work in this world come in to help people, you know, because it is daunting. I've got to say, me and my wife are now renovating, you know, we're knocking down a wall this week, which is a stud wall in our house, and we're thinking of new colours. And between us, it is a minefield.
Yeah.
But what was so lovely about reading yours and the start of your book, you have this thing called the six questions, and it so makes sense. And I was like,
oh my god,
why did we not think of this before? And I'm not blowing your the trumpet, because you're on my guest on my podcast, but explain to my listener what six questions is, and then we'll go through it, and then we'll pick out some bits as well along the way. But talk about the six questions for me.
So the six questions are actually came back to journalism again from my journalism training, and I trained at a college in Darlington, up in the northeast, and we were always told, you know, when you're writing a news story, it's like an inverted triangle, because you need to get all the information in at the top of the story, and then you can have the kind of twiddly decorative bits down at the bottom. So what you need to know when you read a news story, and you should get all this from the first sentence, is who, what, when, where, why, and how. So those are the six questions. And if you read a sort of traditional news report, you will see who was doing what, where they were doing it, why they were doing it, how they were doing it, and when they were doing it, which in the case of a daily news report is probably yesterday. But, you know, that sort of sets up any news story for you. And, you know, that's been deeply ingrained into me. And although blog writing and feature writing is very, very different, I realised through the process of sort of consulting on interior design and helping people with their houses that those six questions are, you know, incredibly valid. Because, you know, you might, you know, who is using this room? Well, yes, oh, it's my son and it's my daughter and it's my husband or my partner, whatever. But actually, you need to be more detailed about that. Who, you know, the needs of a toddler in a space are very different from the needs of a teenager. The requirements for a kitchen for a couple with, you know, a couple with a couple of kids are very different from a couple of pensioners. So it seemed to me that asking those questions of any space you wanted to decorate would completely help you get that right. So, you know, who is in that space, and what are they doing in there? You know, if you come to your sitting room, are you watching a film in there? Are you having a conversation? Is it got to be a playroom for small children? You know, so, and that would lead you then, if that's the case, you need to have storage for all the plastic tat. So, you know, the who and the what, and then the when very clearly plays into questions of colour. Because, you know, if it's a bedroom, do you want a dark and cosy bedroom for when you're in there at night? Or do you want something light and bright for when you're in there in the morning? And, you know, I think that answer varies depending on whether people are sort of night owls or morning larks. But it also plays into questions of lighting. You know, do you want task lighting? Do you want spotlights? Do you need more ambient light? So just kind of work through those questions and realize that every single one was valid. So, you know, why are you doing it? Make a list of what's wrong with it. And that's why you're doing it. Where is not just where in the house, but, you know, where are you going to shop for the stuff to do it? Because it's good to, you know, make a list of your shops that you want to buy from or aspire to buy from. And how are you going to pay for it?
Yeah.
So those questions for me summed up pretty much everything you needed to know about interior design in those six questions.
It was amazing because literally, like I said, as I was reading your book, me and my wife had decided to knock down a wall. So next to our kitchen and lounge, we have this tiny little office, what actually used to be the nursery, and it was perfect for my daughter. It fit a cot in there, and it was teeny tiny, but it's perfect. She's now moved up to the loft room, and this room become an office. I never use it as an office, just because it's a bit small, it's a bit dark, the sun comes
classic, on the side.
Classic mistake. It's a dumping ground now. It literally has laundry in it. And my wife was like, wouldn't it be lovely to knock that wall down? And the builder in me goes, well, no, you've got to save, you know, you don't want to and limit the house property from three bedrooms down to two. But actually, we spoke to an estate agent ages ago when we valued the property, and they went, I would never build this as a three bedroom because people would be upset that that's too small. You might as well say it's a good two bedroom with a great little side room or something.
So totally.
Well, do you know what? Let's knock this wall down. So this week we're going to knock it down. But then that opens up, you know, we've got two different colours rooms going on. We've got to redecorate everything. So it kind of got us excited. But I love the story that you were talking about. For example, your mum, you know, her bathroom, she didn't want a bath. She always wanted a shower because she was getting older. And then she decided, but someone, a builder had told it, well, you can't sell the property if you don't have a bath in it. Cut to 10, 15 years later, she's still got this bath that she's been in once. And I think you said your kids have been in it more than she has.
Yeah.
And she's got this tiny little naff bath shower in the corner. Yeah. And I just thought it made sense. We're told to do so many things. But actually, if you go through your six questions, it answers them and makes it that you get the house that you really want.
And I think, you know, I mean, when my mother did that, so, you know, whatever it was, 10, 15 years ago, probably, I think there was still a sense that, you know, you needed to have a bath and people wouldn't buy your house. I mean, I do think, you know, times are changing and people are a bit more open. I said to her when she said this, you know, A, you're not planning on selling this house. You know, this is your forever house. So you have to make it so that it works for you. And obviously the plumbing for the bath will still be there in the walls. So if somebody wants to buy your house and it's a deal breaker for them that there's no bath, you know, they can put it back. And I think we've got better over the last few years at decorating our houses now for the people who are in them to live in them. You know, there was a period when it was all about, you know, that sort of Sarah Beeny's property ladder, wasn't it? I mean, it was buying houses and decorating them in neutral tones so you could flip them and make money. You know, we've come out the other side of that, and now we're decorating our houses to live in, and we have to think about what works for the people who are in that building at that time. And, you know, we'll worry about selling it if and when we need to sell it. So, and as you point out, taking down a stud wall is not a permanent thing. You know, you could put that stud wall back if the estate agent came along and said, that's going to be a real problem.
Absolutely. And the way we've designed it as well is we might actually even leave the fact that there's two doors going in there. You know, we might put something in front of it on the other side so you don't see it when you're in the room. But when somebody comes to buy the house, they know that they can recreate it just by throwing up a stud wall. It's not
totally
really a big deal.
Yeah.
But then moving on in the book, that they were the first like six parts to the book. And obviously there's a 101 interior design answers. And when we before we started this interview, you were going, oh, but you know, you're teaching an old dog same tricks. But actually, I learned a few things in this.
Did you?
I did. And I was like, I thought I knew all of this. One thing that I'm really interested in is I've heard it said a few times and I don't understand it. So, and you mentioned it in this book and it made clear sense. So I'm sure my listener would want to know, what's the red thread?
Oh, the red thread is how you bring a series of rooms together. You know, this is a question I'm asked all the time. How do I make my house look cohesive and like, you know, like it all belongs to the same person and not just like it's a series of sort of disparate rooms under the same roof? And so the red thread, I think, is a Scandinavian phrase, which I'm not going to attempt to pronounce, but that is how you link everything. Many of us do this instinctively without sort of giving it a label. But if you're stuck as to how to marry together furniture of different periods or, you know, different prints and colours, then using the red thread helps you do that. So in my house, for example, I have, and you can see it on my Instagram, I have a sort of burgundy spotty staircase, which obviously runs up throughout the centre of the whole house. And I have lots of different shades of pink. I've got a pale pink bedroom. I've then got a pale pink sofa in my sitting room. I've got a burgundy fireplace in my office. So I have that palette of colours, which is repeated again and again throughout the house. And there are variations because there's green and there's chocolate brown and there's gold. So there are other colours that spin off it, but they're all kind of connected together. You know, another of my red threads perhaps is velvet without really realizing. You know, I have a velvet headboard. I've got a velvet chair in my office. I've got a velvet sofa in my sitting room. So that's another material that goes throughout my house. And then, you know, that might be wood. So you might have the same color wooden furniture throughout. So I've got a wooden clock in my bedroom and I've got a wooden coffee table downstairs. So you can just kind of trace the links throughout your house. And that's what makes it feel that it all belongs to the same person and makes it feel. Another thing I always say is, you know, it's got to look like you meant it. So if you absolutely love neon orange, then, you know, by all means, have a neon orange cushion on your sofa. But, you know, you maybe need a neon orange candlestick in the kitchen so that it looks like you are creating that thread and linking the spaces together and it doesn't look random.
Oh, amazing. Because in your book, you talk, you know, I think you said even if you've got a really ultra modern house, but, you know, you like wooden tones, you can put like a wooden candlestick holder on the mantelpiece or something. Like you say, that little nod throughout just links everything together.
Well, this is it. And if you live in an open plan space, so for example, if you've got a marble or marble style worktop in your kitchen but it's quite open plan and you can see other rooms, then maybe, you know, a marble candlestick or a coffee table with a marble top will link that space through it, because you always must consider the views you have of other rooms through other rooms and views through doorways. So find ways of linking them that way through. And it's not just colour, as you say, it's colour, it's materials, it's textures. So, you know, just repeat those a little bit throughout the house and you'll find it will all come together much more cohesively.
You're on your podcast, you're known as like the stack queen. So, yeah. And what I found really interesting and lovely in your book, there's quite a few geeky out moments in
your book.
So, you know, you had the whole, there was a whole page on measurements. There's a page on
balls. That'd be useful. Yes.
So what bits did you enjoy geeking out on most? Because each one was a full on topic. So, you know, which ones got you going?
I think what drove me in that book is I really, really wanted it to be useful. And again, the journalism training, you know, why is that like that? And how is it like that? So I think, you know, providing those measurements and answering those questions, which for some people will feel really obvious and for other people, they don't know. So I just thought this is really useful to have a page so that, you know, if you've never done a kitchen before, you need to know that the standard worktop depth is 60 centimeters. You need to know that these are the three basic sides of mattresses, so that if you're wondering if you've got room for a bedside table, you need to allow this much space for the bed. And so I do love a stat and a number.
I loved it.
I can't add them up, but I love to know them.
You're same as me. But I absolutely loved it. And I just thought, as I was reading, I thought, she's loving this. She's lost in this world of light bulbs. But do you know what? And I learned a lot as well. Even I was like, because I'm still old measurements. You know, you get that whole 100 watt. That's bright. And I like everything to be bright. So yes. I totally got you with all of that. You know, I said you're a stats queen, and that for me comes from your great indoors podcast with Sophie Robinson. So how did the podcast come about? How did you and Sophie end up doing the podcast, The Great Indoors?
It was again, one of those things, you know, before I did the blog, I spent 2 years going, must do a blog, and, you know, sort of didn't get it together. And I'd had this vague notion that people were doing podcasts. I mean, you know, felt like everybody was doing it, although I think compared with how many people are doing them now, hardly anybody was 2 years ago. But I'd sort of had this idea knocking around that I wanted to do one, but I didn't know quite how it would be and what I would do. And then I actually met our producer, Kate Taylor, first. She invited me onto another podcast she was producing with Viv Groskop. And so I went on there and I met Kate, and I just got on with her really well. And I said to, you know, one of these days I'm going to do a podcast and you're going to produce it for me. So I kept in touch with her. And then I'd known Sophie, you know, for a few years. And it was another one of those moments. We were just like, you know, we'd met at some event and we were just like, we should do a podcast. That's the solution. And I was like, brilliant, because I've already met the producer. Uh-huh. So just let's go. So it was one of those happy things where it all came together. And I hope it works really well because we're so different.
Oh, yeah. You are so different, but you offer different sides to everything. And that's the thing about interior design. It's all subjective. There's nothing to say that's right and wrong. And you have some really lovely segments in there. But I asked some of you've got the Great Indoors Podcast Facebook group, and I asked some questions on there because we were supposed to be doing this interview at the Idle Home Show, and
we were.
Everything that's been going on is all been postponed or cancelled or whatever. So I asked, put some questions out, and I had a lovely question from a lady called Jill Hansen, who said, has working with Sophie encouraged you to use more colour in your own home? Because Sophie is the colour queen.
Oh, I'm gonna say no, but maybe. I think it's not that what I've learned through working through, I've learned a huge amount about colour from working with Sophie. And I've learned that I do love colour. Why would I say I didn't love colour? I love colour, but I love to use it in a different way from her. So Sophie likes very bright, high contrast colours because she finds that energising. That gets her going. Whereas I find lots of high contrast colours makes me feel anxious and a bit stressy. So I have lots of very, you know, rich colour saturated shades in my house. You know, my sitting room is chocolate brown. They're very much more tonal. So, you know, I might have as many colours as Sophie, but mine would range from a burgundy to, you know, 17 different shades of pink through to the very palest mushroom. And nothing is that high contrast, whereas, you know, she likes it brighter and punchier and bolder. And, you know, she has taught me very much that you got to look at how a colour makes you feel. Mm-hmm. And I suppose I've tuned in through recording in her house where, you know, sometimes it's a bit stressful for me with all the bright yellow. We were recording actually at her holiday let before Christmas in Brighton, and she just redecorated it. And there are pictures of it on her grid. She's got this incredible teal wallpaper with huge bright flowers on it, and she's got a leopard print rug in there, and she's got a purple sofa and lots of throws. And I arrived, and apparently Sophie and Kate said to me afterwards that I'd sat down, basically ranted for about 10 minutes. And, you know, I couldn't think why. I mean, I hadn't been in a bad mood. Nothing particularly had happened. And we kind of tracked it back afterwards. And I think it was the decor was making me really stressed, because it's a small space. You know, I can look at a photograph of it and I can completely appreciate the skill with which she has put it together. Yeah. But it's too much for me. I can't be in it. Whereas Sophie finds that makes her happy and energized. And I was just in a fury.
I love that. So the answer to the question is you appreciate it, but not for you. But the success of the podcast has been insane. And how do you balance, like, because I noticed you do the podcast and then you'll do a blog post about the podcast. Are they feeding each other? Have you noticed that your readership has changed? Are they moving to blog posts? I'm interested because, like you said, you started your career going from journalism to a podcast, to a blog, and then things are moving a little bit more to podcasts. But do you find the audiences are the same, or do you still have very different audiences?
I think my audiences tend to be very different. I mean, we do a blog post to accompany the podcast. It's kind of show notes, but, you know, a lot of people said when we started, you can't possibly do a podcast about interiors with no pictures. You know, how are you going to do it when it's all audio? And, you know, I like to think we've proved that we can Absolutely. Do that. Yeah. But the blog post is just to give people sort of, you know, illustrations of what we've talked about and kind of, you know, extra value, if you like. So you can absolutely listen to the podcast and get that, you know, chit chat and banter and interaction between us two. And then you audience who don't listen to podcasts. But, you know, I think the stuff we're covering within the podcast is I would hope worth knowing. So, you know, it's worth having a blog post on it as well. And I think there's an audience overlap between all that. But I know that many of my blog readers don't actually do Instagram. I think probably more Instagram people read blog posts, but it doesn't necessarily track back the other way. So it's about world domination. it's about reaching different people in the ways they like to be reached. And for some, that's listening. You know, I think a lot of people listen to podcasts when they're walking their dog.
Yeah.
Or when they're doing sort of housework. I am not a great listener because I write all the time. So I can't have people talking at me when I'm writing. So for me, I probably prefer to read. So it's just about different things. And yes, of course, the content will overlap and there might be an idea I've had it for a blog post, which we can expand on, or, you know, Sophie's got opinions on. So that works for the podcast. But equally, things we've talked about will feed into, you know, stuff I've learned later to write about. So I think they're all, you know, they're all interconnected.
It's so true. You're saying, like, normally I inhale podcasts and inhale audiobooks when I'm driving or when I'm working, doing my carpentry. I can kind of listen to them and dip into them. But now we're stuck at home, I'm finding I haven't listened to many, you know, because I'm reading, I'm watching a film, I'm with the family or something. It depends what that person does in their life and how they're working.
It does. And, you know, Sophie, I know she drives her son to school every day. So she has a school run. So she has that kind of period when she's in the car and listening.
Yeah.
My kids are older. They get themselves to school. So I don't drive anywhere. And in fact, actually 5 minutes before we started recording this, my husband just went out to test the car and the battery's completely flat. So, you know, that's not going anywhere for a while. Yeah. But, you know, I don't have a sort of regular driving slot or a dog walking slot.
Yeah, so when yours I might is more listen about the blog.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute joy. I always ask my final question is for interior designers to describe. I just want to know what your dream interiors would be and what you're drinking when you're in this room.
Oh my God, you like to end on a high, don't you? I've never thought about it. The problem is it changes all the time. I mean, if you were to ask me where, no question, my dream room is in Italy. And sort of any old, you know, we could go for a crumbling palazzo on the banks of the Grand Canal in Venice. You know, that'd be quite nice, but equally I'd take a farmhouse in Tuscany. I think my dream room would probably be a sitting room, because I think it's interesting. People talk about the kitchen being the heart of the home, because that's where you prepare meals and food is love. And, you know, the family gather in there. But I would take that actually the sitting room is the room in the house that sums up the feeling of home, because that's where we go to when we want to relax, when we want to feel safe, when we want to chat or meet the family. So my ideal room would be a sitting room. I would like it to be huge so I could have different zones. You know, I would have a kind of sofa area with a TV, but I'd like a fireplace so you could sit around the fire and drink. What am I drinking? Red wine around the fire in the evening, but also maybe a couple of chairs by a window and some bookshelves for reading in the morning. So there I'm drinking coffee. I've got different drinks depending on the area. So I've got this kind of mammoth sitting room with a very high ceiling. I'm going, maybe it's Georgian. With the original features, lots of nice plaster work, and some antique furniture, some Persian rugs, probably going with pale walls at this stage. That's the mood for today. How does that sound?
That sounds amazing. And it links all, I love what you did then as well, because it links back to the book. There was a nice little thing we talked about lighting, and you saying, look, you know, certain parts of the day you want it to be nice and lovely and sofa-y and lovely, and then there'll be a little table in the corner where you can have your coffee, so you need like a nice little light there if you're going to read. You might not need light because it's in the window, and that's the whole point of the book as well, just fed into all of those little, knowing the six questions like we said at the beginning, you know, who's
well, there you go.
Where you are.
And I didn't even rehearse it.
You didn't even rehearse it. Kate Wilson-Swire, it's been an absolute pleasure. So if anybody wanted to contact you, what's the best social medias to contact you on?
Well, either the blog or Instagram. I mean, I get a lot of messages on Instagram and I try and respond to them. but don't always manage it. So, you know, emailing through the blog has a contact form, and that's probably the surest way.
Okay, and that's madabouthehouse is your Instagram handle?
Yeah.
Madabouthehouse.com. Kate Watson-Smiley, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for talking to me and the TV Carpenter podcast.
Thank you for having me.
What a brilliant lady and an amazing career that she's had and is continuing to have. She's always at the forefront of anything interior design, whether it be starting a blog for the first time or starting one of the first ever British interior design podcasts. If you get a chance to check out her book, Mad About the House, 101 Interior Design Answers, it's well worth a read. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And once again, I have to thank my sponsors, Thorndown. Don't forget, you can get 15% discount by going to thorndown.co.uk and typing in the code TVCarpenter. I hope I've managed to cheer you up wherever you are. Don't forget, stay home, stay safe, and thank you for listening to the TV Carpenter podcast.